Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, my second guest today says fear of the unknown and the siren call of comfort is why many organizations, civilizations, and individuals fail. For years, we've been taught to problem solve by thinking outside the box. I've even taught classes on this myself. But Alan Einey, Senior Specialist for Creativity and Scenario Planning at the Boston Consulting Group, is going to tell us how thinking in new boxes is the way to go and how that will revolutionize our lives. He says there's nothing wrong in thinking outside the box, but there are three problems with it, and we're going to find out what they are. Awesome book. Can't wait to talk with him. Coming up first, Susan Harrow asks, why are sound bites like sex? Well, she is a top media coach, marketing expert, and author of Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul. Her clients include everyone from rock stars and celebrity chefs to CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurs, coaches, consultants, speakers, and authors. And for the past 23 years, she's helped clients shine as guests on CBS's 60 Minutes, Oprah, Good Morning America, the Today Show, Fox News, Bill O'Reilly, Larry King, and the list goes on. Some people know her as the go-to girl for getting on Oprah, but that's not around anymore. But I know she's working on other avenues there. What you probably don't know about Susan Harrow, even if you are familiar with her work, is that she was almost sold into slavery to a Bedouin sheik in Israel for 10 camels and a mule. So, Susan Harrow, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. And I love that, you know, you made that just sound like it was off the cuff, like you thought of all those things yourself. That's like one of the beautiful marks of somebody who can do sound bites so well. It sounds natural and engaging. So that was terrific.
Well, you gave me that sound bite. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. First of all, I'm going to bite on the first sound bite, which was... how you were almost sold into slavery to a Bedouin sheik in Israel for 10 camels and a mule. What were you doing in Israel, and how come you almost got sold?
You know, it was, I've never been to Israel, so it was just, I was there with my family exploring that beautiful country, which is so peaceful, even though it's so, there's war everywhere all the time. I mean, I thought that was a fascinating sort of juxtaposition of, you know, history. But I was there, so we were in the city, and my brother was walking a little bit in front of me, and this man I saw, you know, a full Bedouin sheik is sort of following me and staring at me with these intent, beady eyes. And, you know, I glanced over at him, and he says, "Is that your husband?" Pointing to my brother, and I said, "Yes, it is." He says, "Tell him I want to buy you for 10 camels and a mule." And I said, "Yeah." And I said to him, "You know, that does not sound like a lot." "It is a lot." "And you tell him." And he's like following us, you know, just really persistently. And my brother, being the ever comedian, is like, "Yeah, I'll sell her." You know, but what I found out later is that, and that actually was a lot. And I was about 40 at the time. So who knows what a 20-year-old would have fetched.
Well, I'm surprised your brother didn't just jump at that. I think my brother would have done.
That's what I'm saying. He's like, "Take her." I'm like, "Jimmy, you know, this is serious." It was pretty scary, actually. It really was scary.
Yeah, it is. But I know you love sound bites. I love sound bites, too. We had a guest on a few weeks ago who's a lady who lives way up in Alaska, off the grid, never sees a soul from, you know, one year to the next. And National Geographic did a special and featured her in Life Below Zero. And she became my queen of sound bites because she just was so succinct in language. It's almost like she didn't want to waste any words. And she'd come out with these sound bites, which just really made her a very memorable character. But you use them. Tell us how you use them in your work.
Yeah, so there's really three fail spots that entrepreneurs, authors, anyone who wants to get publicity go through. The first one is that they think they pitch, they think that the most important thing is getting the media's attention. So it's the pitch. That's the first fail spot. The second fail spot is not passing the producer's audition or not getting the quote from the journalist. And then the third fail spot is they don't know what to do once they're on a show to engage the audience's interest, serve the host, and also serve themselves by driving business and sales in the direction that they want to grow their business.
Okay.
So you're still using sound bites even when you're trying to get the media's attention in the pitch. And the headline is most important there, because if you don't have a dramatic, engaging headline, like in the subject of your email, nobody's going to read any further. So you have to capture attention in those first 10 seconds. And actually now it's 7 seconds. And what Malcolm Gladwell says is we now sum you up in 3 seconds. So you really only have 3 seconds with your presence, and you've got about 10 seconds with your words.
It's not a lot of time, is it?
It is very short. It is like taking, and most people, their problem is not that they don't have enough to say, but that they have too much. And it's like taking War and Peace and turning it into haiku. It's a totally different language.
Mm. Well, I've run into a lot of people, obviously, who've had media training. That doesn't always translate very well. And as you said at the beginning, there's a difference between, you know, summing up what you do, whether you're looking for a job in a new company or a promotion in the same company, whether you're trying to get on television, radio, whatever. There's a way of doing it that sounds natural. So I'm curious, when you work with people, what's the number one mistake you see them making when they're trying to sum up put together their sound bites?
People are afraid of bragging, begging, or whoring. So that's the first thing. They think that they have to sell themselves they have to sell their soul in order to sell their offer. So that's really a very huge bugaboo. And I switch it immediately by saying it's not about you. The first thing to think of, number one, is how are you going to serve? What's your deepest intention? Not what's in it for you, but really two sentences, which are, what does my audience need to know now, and how can I help? That's really the first thing, making it relevant for any audience. And that is key for any situation, not just media. And
yeah.
Then, what's that?
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, and then the second point is to, if you're looking for new business, it's to figure out a soundbite that shows the area of success that you want to drive business to. So it may be a story of a client that's really fascinating that then shows your kind of expertise and the kind of clients that you like and that you want. That's also, it has to do double duty. It has to also entertain and be lively, and you have to be lovable. Plus, it has to, you know, have some kind of nugget in there that's fascinating to the host and to the audience, as well as drives business.
Right. And I think it really has to capture their personality, too, because if somebody's, you know, stepping too far outside of their personality and they've got this great, as they think, sound bite, it just doesn't translate very well.
It doesn't. And I think that that's really key to why some people are successful and some people are not. It's your presence. People underestimate that part. You, the you-ness of it. And I remember, you know, a long time ago, Burt Reynolds saying, hey, I'm not selling my book, I'm selling myself. And we ultimately always are. And I know that people don't like to think of it that way. It's like, oh, well, it's the offer, it's this, but it's the everything you do say, are, and think, from your words to your website, also need to have the feel of you. So it's the feeling of you that people get. It's not your clever words. You can be as clever all day long, and you can still be not successful.
Right, right. So give me an idea of a couple of sound bites that you use regularly. And well, let's talk about this one that we introed in the beginning.
I don't use this one regularly, by the way. I just remembered it. I go, I'm like, and what did I say? And I wrote that to you, by the way, Vicki. And then I go, you know what? I actually don't remember what my answer is, so I'm just going to have to think of a new one.
Well, I can guess what it would be, but let's just address it since we brought it up.
Okay.
Why are sound bites like sex? And this just shows you don't have to be perfect and have everything perfectly memorized.
No, you don't, because I don't, of course. But also, I want to hear what you think it is after
well,
I tell what
I
you
would
tell.
Say, because they tease you. They're supposed to tease you.
Oh, I I like that. You know, that's really nice. I like that. So
I get you in the mood for more, you know.
Exactly. Oh, that's really good. I'm going to have to, you know, incorporate that if you don't mind. So when you get it right, it goes zing.
Oh, okay.
That's just one thing. I actually had something else that I don't remember that I said. So I don't actually remember. But the thing about sound bites is that they're fluid. It's not that you just have like a stack of them that you repeat over and over again. It's that they're fluid. They're living. There's always new things coming in. You're thinking about how to phrase things in a different way. Yes, we may use things that work over and over again, but you'd never want to sound like a broken record. And sometimes I do hear people, hear them on the radio, I hear them on TV. I've heard three interviews, they say exactly the same thing. That's really a no-no.
Right, right. But it's surprising how many.
And we as an audience want something fresh. We want to see the freshness of you. That's why when people are so terrified about media, they say, you know, they're going to make me slip up. The journalists and producers love you to slip up because it's fresh, not because it makes you look bad.
Right. And it's not we're trying to trip people.
No.
Well, I remember years ago when I was in the financial world and I went to see a top motivational speaker who I saw him in San Diego, I saw him in L.A., and I saw him on the East Coast. And because they were work things, you know, I had to go. But each time he gave the same thing. He might have varied it a little.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, boy, I heard that the first time. Now I'm hearing it for the third time.
I know. And I know people who, you know, you hear them 10 years later and they're saying the same thing. There's no kind of evolution.
Yeah. Well, we have to take a quick break. So okay. I want to just, when we come back, I want to ask you how you got into this work and what drives you to do this kind of work, because I find it fascinating. My guest is Susan Harris. She's a top media coach, marketing expert, and the author of Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul. And you are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay tuned.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN!
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Coming up September 30th on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. How to thrive in a workplace driven by office politics without compromising your integrity. Expert Dr. Jack Godwin shares how to be your authentic self while dodging political bullets. Tune in Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And see conversationslive.net for upcoming shows and more than 300 podcasts.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Proud to bring variety to your radio dial. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Susan Harrow, and she's a media coach, marketing expert, and the author of Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul, as well as a whole host of other books, I should say. Her clients include everyone from rock stars and celebrity chefs to CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. and entrepreneurs, coaches, consultants, etc. So I'm just really curious, Susan. I always like to know how people got into what they're doing, because I know along the way you had various gigs, were trying out a whole bunch of stuff, and I know you've been doing this for many years now, but what led you into doing this kind of work? And in particular, why with women?
Yeah, and I do have men clients too, and I love them as well. So I got into it as I was first a publicist, and so that means I booked people on all the national TV shows and newspapers, Wall Street Journal, you know, Fortune, all of that sort of thing. And then what I found was, though, sometimes what would happen was a great big nothing. So I had done my job. I had done what I was hired for and got them the best bookings possible. But what I found was the problem was them. And that they didn't do their job. And their job was creating those kind of sound bites that made you sit up in your chair and, you know, perk up and then rush to the store or pick up the phone to buy. And that wasn't happening. So I started media training my publicity clients. And then I found dramatic, visible results, a change in their bottom line. And some of them and I have a huge track record now of people doubling or tripling their business using sound bites correctly when they get PR. So that's really the missing link.
Right.
That people, you know, everybody, as I said before, everybody is focused on getting the media's attention, but then they're not yet focused on, well, wait a minute, what do I say to pass the audition, number two, and then number three, what do I say once I'm live to engage the right audience and drive business and grow my business in the direction that I want. That's where most people fail.
Right. And it's all about, it's about memorability. You want to create a memorability factor there. And, you know, I know in my work as a strategic communications consultant, it is about cutting through that clutter. There's so much information out there now.
Yeah.
And if we sound like everybody else and look like everybody else, who's going to remember us?
That's right. So it's making your mark not only with your words, but with your whole presence. And yes, does that mean it's a whole package? And some people don't like that word, you know, that you have to be packaged properly, but you do.
Right.
You have to be packaged properly. And one of my clients, Dr. Sarah Gottfried, her book is a New York Times bestseller, and she's got a booming business. I worked with her for almost a year before the launch of her book. One of the things that she does that is to create thought leader status. So we talked a lot about that. Like, how do you be, everybody's calling themselves a thought leader, but very few people are. And how do you do that? So one way to distinguish yourself is to coin a term. And one term that she coined was tiara time. You know, you need to take tiara time. She was talking to women. You need to take tiara time, which means you tell your husband, you tell your kids, I'm going to close the door. Nobody can knock on it. Everybody has to leave me alone for the next half hour. It's very quick, right? It's very
and you're talking about, I read this article of yours, you're talking about the tiara that you actually put on your head.
You put it on your head. Yes, you do put it on your head. Yes. So it's visual. We created part of that segment, too. When you're on TV, it has to be both visual and visceral and memorable, all those things. So TV is a medium where you can do that. So you're going to remember that like you remembered it, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yes. And another thing you talk about in that article, which I think was on psychologytoday.com, but another thing you talk about is have a philosophy because, you know, one thing that I appreciate as a student of life, I mean, I learn so much on the radio show and so much in my work in general because I'm constantly researching and, you know, assimilating and then trying to create new stuff from, you know, what we can. But and one thing that I appreciate is when somebody has their own philosophy and isn't just quoting everybody else all the time. Talk to us a little bit about why you think that's so important and how somebody can really take a stand on that and develop their own point of view.
Well, you know, I was just on someone's website, which was about writing a bestseller weekend. I think it was Alicia Dunham. She wrote, write a book, make a change, create a movement. I'm not sure if I'm quoting her directly, but I thought, you know what? It's partly about, are you creating a movement? Are you doing more than just, you know, just jumbling things together from other people? To really take the time and to develop your own personal philosophy, of course, it's going to be influenced by other people. But what we think of is interesting is also people having an opinion. And if you have a strong opinion, that also gets you media attention because strong opinions, backed with your experience. In fact, it's not just a strong opinion with nothing behind it.
Right.
It's a strong opinion with your own gravitas behind it. And
right.
that's the difference. Like, now everyone can spout an opinion or everyone can quote everyone else, but really a well-developed philosophy that is part of your digital footprint is what the media is looking for when they check you out. It's not that you're just clever and can give a quote in the moment, but they go back and look at your digital footprint. Are you a person of heft? Are you a person who can really carry the whole show and can go deeper than just a quick soundbite?
Right. And I think since we're on the topic of thought leaders there, I think one of the key factors there too is that you have to have some... you have to be able to envision the future and be credible to talk about it. You have to have credibility there because you've got to not just know what's happening now, but you've got to envision where things will go. That's what people are looking for when they call experts.
It is, and that sometimes can make you very unpopular. You know, Mark Twain said, when you find yourself on the side of the majority, it's time to make a change. I
right.
love that quote.
Right, right.
I love that quote, but it's not just doing it for controversy's sake. It's doing it because you have a step in the future. You have you know, you're really thinking about something that can be that kind of possibility. Like what's happening right now, I think it's been happening for some time, and I feel very heartened by it, is that you know, the government is not giving us what we want in a lot of areas, be it healthcare, be it immigration, be it whatever. So what's happening is there are these little movements all over the world of people taking a stand on their own and saying, you know, I'm going to make a change. I'm going to go start a little, not even a nonprofit, but, you know, I'm going to go to Africa or I'm going to go to Harlem, and I'm going to start a foundation, or I'm going to start something where I'm going to make the change, and I'm not going to wait for the government to do it. And that, to me, is, you know, that everyone is empowered to do. And Oprah was one of the first people to give that kind of power to. You know, to say, you know, any one of you can do something beyond something in your backyard. And you don't have to be famous and you don't have to be important already. You just have to be determined and go out there and actually do it. And I love that.
Yeah. Don't wait for them, the invisible them, to fix it for you.
Exactly.
We
the
all
visible
have
you.
Yes. That's
yes.
Right.
The visible you.
The
now.
Visible you. That's a good soundbite there. So we all have people in our life who've been very influential. Name a couple of people, or you don't have to name them, but two people who've influenced you the most in your business life and why?
I think the first one is Swami Vivekananda. I read all of his books a way long time ago. My mom brought me back some originals from India. I said, could you get me, you know, the Vivekananda set? One of the things that he said that I really love is that there's no such thing as a teacher. It's that we invite people to the table. How did he say it? He said, it's sort of the essence of a soundbite. We show them things in a way that they can see it, and then they go and do it themselves. So I'm misquoting him. I don't remember how he said that. But
we get the gist,
really,
yeah.
But I love that. So Swami Vivekananda is number one, and then probably Gandhi is too, who said, my life is my message. Not easy. And is this a daily practice? Yes. Is my life my message right now? Not a lot of the time, not necessarily, but that's the daily practice. And I think that's sometimes what people forget too, is that this is not something that's set in stone, this kind of learning or evolution. It really is, like everything else, a practice. Like, I do Aikido, Japanese martial art, and my word is, you know, like, keep training. Am I really bad at it still? Yes. Am I going to keep at it until I get my black belt and beyond? Yes.
Well, good for you. Good for you. So I know we're almost at the end of our segment, Susan. I know you have a couple of webinars coming up. Your website is susanharrow.com. How can people find the webinars that are coming up, and what are they about?
Yeah, so one that you can find is Speak and Soundbites, 5 Surefire Strategies to Get More Clients, Customers, and Sales and Become a Media Darling. And that's at bit.ly/SB, like soundbite, webinar 1, the number one. So it's bit.ly/SB, webinar one. So that's one that they can go to right away and start learning more about speaking in soundbites that will help them in any, you know, help you in any kind of situation, whether it's a networking meeting or even meeting a mate.
Right. And this is available now, this webinar. Is there a fee on that webinar?
No, that's free.
Okay. So good to know. Free webinar up there, and it's available right now. So if you didn't catch that, you can get in touch with Susan Harrow, susanharrow.com, or you can give me a call, and I've got that link right here with me. Susan Harrow, great talking with you. I've seen your picture floating around many times. I've come across your work. I did sit in on one of your webinars once too. So actually,
really?
Been really good to talk with you today.
Oh, it's great. Thank you so much for having me on. It was such a great pleasure. It went by so fast.
It did. Well, please stay with us, everyone. Coming up next, we're going to talk with Alan Einey, who has co-authored a fantastic new book. It's called Thinking in New Boxes, 5 Essential Steps to Spark the Next Big Idea, a whole new paradigm for business creativity. I'm learning a lot from it. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Northwest School of Animal Massage, we cover the world of living successfully with your animal friends. This week, September 22nd, it's a Behavior Training and Healing Sunday with me. We'll catch up on all the animals in the news and all that's happened in my absence. Plus, I'll have open phone lines for your calls and questions. So if you've got a problem with any of your animal friends, call me and I'll help you fix them. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Get current weather, traffic, and news. Visit 1150kknw.com and stay informed with Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Alan Einey. He's the Senior Specialist for Creativity and Scenario Planning at the Boston Consulting Group. He's trained literally thousands of executives and consultants. He runs a wide range of workshops across industries and speaks around the world about coming up with product, service, and other ideas, developing a new strategic vision, and thinking creatively about the future. Before joining Boston Consulting Group, he earned an MBA from Columbia Business School and an honors from McGill University. And I'm very pleased to have him here today. His new book is called Thinking in New Boxes, A New Paradigm for Business Creativity. Welcome to the show, Alan Einey.
Thank you so much for having me, Vicki.
And I should say your book is co-authored with Luc de Brabander. You
quite
do
right.
It.
Right, Luc de Brabander. Yes,
thank you. Brabander. Okay. And he also is at the Boston Consulting Group. You work together. Tell us how you decided to put this book together. What sparked the start of, you know, let's write a book together?
Well, there were a couple of things that had to do with it. You know, first of all, whenever we would see business people, and regardless of the industry or wherever we were around the world, you know, they would be frustrated. I think a lot of people have had frustrating experiences with creativity in business, with the brainstorm. You know, when we ask people who's done some form of creative exercise recently, everyone would raise their hand, but who is unreservedly delighted with the results, all the hands would go down. So there was a little bit of that, coupled with the fact that in a world where uncertainty and volatility are increasing and, you know, everybody's pressed for time and the lifespan of a good idea is getting shorter and shorter, this puts a premium on creativity. It means that it's more important than ever before. So if it's more important than ever before and people are frustrated with what they've been told for 50 years of think outside the box, you know, this is where this new paradigm of the new boxes came from.
Okay. So you say it's not that, you know, for years we've been told think outside the box, think outside the box, think outside the box. And you say it's not that, you know, that's a terrible thing, but there are three problems with that advice. So talk to us a little bit about why that's an issue.
I think that's quite right. You know, thinking outside the box misses the fact that since we're all human beings, we all think in boxes and it's completely unavoidable. And if a box is, for us, a synonym with mental model and a way we interpret the world around us, then first of all, you can never get out of boxes completely. Second of all, it's hard to figure out which box you're trying to change. You know, what is your current mental model that you need to adapt? And thirdly, if you do finally manage to get out of your existing box, then you have no idea where to find the next one. You know, saying think outside the box by itself is telling you that your boxes are no good, but it's telling you nothing about where to find the next one. It's like saying don't drive on the highway without telling you if you should take side roads or take a helicopter or use a video conference instead.
Right. You say if we're feeling trapped, if we are, it's because we're thinking, you know, we're basically a prisoner of the boxes that we're thinking in. So tell us how we would start. I know you have a 5-step plan. We'll get into that in a moment. But how do we realize when we're stuck in that box, I guess is what I'm trying to say, when we're becoming a victim of our own box-like thinking, if you will?
Yeah, I think you're right in the way you explain it because, look, all of us are human beings. No matter how smart or brilliant a manager or a CEO or whatever you want, all of us use boxes to think, and all of us get stuck in these habits and routines. You know, this is the way we do things around here. This is who I think of as my customers. This is how I define my competitors. This is the way I interpret the monthly sales data. You know, all of these things, or frankly, this is the way I get dressed in the morning or the way I drive to work. All of these things are boxes, and it's much easier for us to remain in the ones we have rather than actually take the time to thoughtfully identify the ones we're in and challenge them and come up with new ones. Break the constraints that we're operating under and find new ways. You know, we'll always be stuck in boxes, but let's get rid of the old ones and find new ones when the time is right.
Right, right. You say fear of the unknown and the siren call of comfort is why many organizations and civilizations and individuals fail. So how...
Yes.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, no, I think you're quite right. You know, Henry Ford, for example, just to go back over 100 years to one of the classic entrepreneurs and, you know, somebody who's really seen as a fantastic innovator in this country and really globally. And he was indeed an amazing innovator. The whole reason it's called the Model T is because he started with Model A and kept experimenting till he got to T. So it's a fantastic example. And, you know, it's very well known that this guy reinvented the assembly line and improved the undercarriage of the car. And it was the first time that the car was really available for the masses, or more of the masses than had ever had one before, at least. And so suddenly this Model T ended up selling 15 million copies, and that's still one of the best-selling cars of all time up until today. So what happened then? You know, the world kept changing around him. No idea is going to be good forever, whether it's the Model T or the iPhone or anything else. And as General Motors started creating higher-end and lower-end models, and different companies created different colored cars, Henry Ford, of course, famously said, my customers can have any color car they want as long as it's black, right?
Right, right.
You know, he refused to change. He refused to adapt to the worlds evolving around him. And as a result, he almost drove his company into the ground, and it took the next generation of Fords, his grandson, in fact, to save the company. And so, you know, for me, it's a vivid reminder that no matter how brilliant or fantastic the idea, no idea will be good forever because the world keeps changing.
Right, absolutely. And especially now, I mean, it's changing. It seems to be changing like week from week. A technology that is brilliant today is outmoded tomorrow.
Quite right.
So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'd like to start looking at the five steps that you take this approach to thinking in new boxes. I can tell you, I read this book. I have not quite finished it yet, but I've read most of it. And it's not a book you can just flip through. You need to read it. But it is making such a difference in the way I see certain things. I'm quite excited by it. So we'll take
wonderful.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Alan Eaney, co-author with Luc de Brabander of Thinking in New Boxes, a New Paradigm for Business Creativity. And this applies to life too, not just business. Please stay tuned. You'll be you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and we'll be right back.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Coming up September 30th on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. How to thrive in a workplace driven by office politics without compromising your integrity. Expert Dr. Jack Godwin shares how to be your authentic self while dodging political bullets. Tune in Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And see conversationslive.net for upcoming shows and more than 300 podcasts.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Talk radio with a difference. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everybody. We are talking in this segment with Alan Eaney. He's the Senior Specialist for Creativity and Scenario Planning at the Boston Consulting Group. I just found out he's coming here on Thursday to actually talk here in Seattle. And Alan, tell us where you're going to be.
Quite right. I'll be speaking at the Seattle Chamber of Commerce. And my understanding is that the event's at the Chamber's office in the Microsoft Events Center. And it's a Thursday morning from 8 till 9:30 as part of their author series. I'll be talking about the book.
Very good. And the book is called Thinking in New Boxes, A New Paradigm for Business Creativity. And I'm just loving this book because it's really making me think not outside the box, because as we learned in the first segment with Alan, there are three issues with that. So we're going to take a quick look at the five steps that you take to start this thinking process. And I just love the first one because, you know, we're told don't doubt yourself, don't doubt. But step number one, and this is really disruptive, you've got to doubt everything. So talk to us about that.
Quite right. It's, you know, doubting everything. Doubt has such a negative connotation in the business world today. But, you know, I really think that it's the only way, actually, to be creative. You know, we talked a little bit about Henry Ford and how, you know, he got stuck in his existing boxes. He got stuck in this mental model that the Model T was always the answer and was going to be the future of the company just like it had been the past. And if you get too stuck to your existing mental models, then you're not going to be able to change. And so finding your existing boxes, identifying what they are, whether it is about the Model T Ford or about the way you think about your customers, the way you think about yourselves, and then selectively figuring out which of those you're going to challenge, which of those you're going to break, can open the door to all sorts of new things. And I'll give you another example, if I may.
Yeah.
One of my favorite examples is the French company Bic, which was founded after World War II, and for 30 years they made only pens, and we still often think of them as a pen company. But in the 70s, they started thinking about how they could grow. And people threw out all sorts of ideas like erasable pens and refillable pens and four-colored pens. But when somebody threw out the idea of a lighter or a razor, you know, if your mental model is we are a pen company, then lighters and razors are terrible ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're able to doubt this model that you've sustained for 30 years of we are a pen company and change your box and think maybe we are a plastic disposable object company or some other such thing, then lighters and razors are perfectly logical ideas. And by shifting a mental model, they didn't even invent the cheap disposable plastic lighter and razor, so they didn't actually have to have a new idea. But by changing existing ideas and changing the way they looked at themselves, suddenly the door was opened to all sorts of possibilities.
And they've actually, I'm reading here off some of the material, they've achieved the number two market position worldwide for throwaway shavers, right?
Quite right. Yeah. Yes, exactly right.
So it's all about just thinking differently, changing our paradigm, our perception. And I love that doubt period because, you know, throwing everything up in the air and really trying to see things differently is quite challenging, isn't it?
It is. It goes against our human nature. It goes against our... it's not easy, right? But if you actually want to change something, whether it's the way you the route you take to work or the approach you take to your life if you're dealing with a midlife crisis or simply a particular problem you're facing at work in your particular world, you know, it doesn't have to be as existential as BIC changing how they think about the whole company. You know, most of my clients and most of your listeners are probably not CEOs. But that's okay. That's fine. This is valid for a wide range of things.
Right, right. And so step number two is probe the possible, which BIC did when it said, hey, you know, if we're not, maybe we're not a pen company, maybe we're a disposable company. Talk
right.
to us a little
and
bit
in
more
that
about
case, that. Yeah, exactly. In that case, you want to learn more about the world in front of you. And this can be looking at trends in the space of disposable products or doing some customer research or some competitive intelligence, whatever the case may be, but doing all of that exploration while maintaining the culture of doubt. In other words, looking at your customer research with fresh eyes, with a fresh lens, challenging the way you'd always have thought about it, and just remembering that there are multiple correct ways of interpreting the same thing most of the time, that can be a very valuable sort of exploration coming after the doubt phase.
Right. So if somebody's listening now and thinking, well, isn't this just out of the box thinking, how do you respond to that, Alan?
Well, I think, you know, most people in the business world today think that to go and run a brainstorm, you know, they just need to invite a bunch of people to a room, have a plate of cookies and say, you know, all right, everybody, we need to grow, think outside the box, or we need to cut costs, think outside the box, or whatever it is, think outside the box. And to do that means essentially jumping into the third and fourth steps, that of divergence and convergence, getting a lot of ideas on the table and then selecting among them without doubting first. And I think that's why most people are actually frustrated with brainstorming. That's why most people are frustrated with the creative approaches they take today. Because they immediately jump in and think that creativity should be about a blue sky, unconstrained process, when in reality, constraints and criteria and being thoughtful about your existing boxes before you try and come up with new ones can actually really help the process. And that's why for us, maybe this divergence and convergence, which we call the third and fourth phase, are indeed the classic brainstorm. But to not jump straight into them and to start with doubt is what's really fundamentally new here.
Right, makes sense. You have a list in the book of 82 ways to kill a new idea. When we're in that divergent stage, the fun creativity stage, what should we not be saying?
You're quite right. It was quite fun to pull that list together, you can imagine. you know, all of us, when a new idea pops up, we all say, without even thinking about it, you know, oh, that'll never fly. The boss will never go for that. Our competitor tried that last year. You know, all of these sorts of things. Let's run it by legal. Haha. You know.
That's a creativity killer.
Quite right. So, you know, all of these things, you know, I'm not saying never use any of those sentences, right? We're all human beings, and we're not going to fundamentally change every word that comes out of our mouth just because of a new book. At the same time, if we can increase the awareness of when we are using these, if we can recognize that there's a time for divergence where we have to withhold our judgment and get a lot of ideas on the table, And then only afterwards, a time for convergence where we can select among the ideas and prioritize them. I mean, that'll already be huge progress. There's nothing more frustrating for both sides when some people in the room are in divergence mode coming up with a lot of ideas, and some people in the room are in convergence mode systematically picking them apart one by one.
Mm-hmm.
It's terribly frustrating for both sides.
Right, right. So the convergence stage is really where we start narrowing down those ideas and still not shutting them off, but we start narrowing them down.
Quite right, Vicky. And hopefully that's done according to criteria that have been laid out in advance. Because if you don't agree on the criteria in advance, whatever they may be, it could be, you know, a cost to implement or the expected benefit or the risk or the feasibility, whatever you want. But whatever the criteria are, if you just come up with a lot of ideas and wallpaper the whole room with flip charts and then just start picking out the ones that seem most promising, you're inevitably going to revert back to your old boxes. You're going to go back to the ideas that make sense according to the old ways of thinking. But if you agree on your criteria in advance and try to stick to them, you have a much higher chance of changing some of your boxes, changing the way you look at things, and challenging the status quo a little bit.
Yeah, and this is so important to challenge that status quo. And this is true of life. I mean, whether we're looking for a new job, we're looking for a new home, we just want a different way of living and being in the world. This is all good material here. You know, before we get on to step five, I just want to talk about a couple of the creativity spurring exercises that you use. I love this one. If you're in an organization, just imagine that your organization no longer exists in, say, 25 years. Talk to us a little bit about that.
It's an amazing thing. Yeah, the idea of, you know, challenging yourself to change your box by imagining something that you don't expect, right? What if it's 25 years from now and we don't exist? How could this have happened? Who killed us, as it were? Imagine that it's 25 years from now and our CEO is profiled on the cover of CEO Monthly for whatever reason. Or imagine trying to describe your company without using some of the most obvious key words. Like if you're Starbucks or something, try and imagine describing Starbucks without using the words coffee, tea, snacks, or meeting place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these things are designed to push you outside of your comfort zone, to push you outside of your existing boxes and get you to think about things in new ways.
Yeah. I love this one, too. That was the without using these five words, the champagne company, a major French-based producer of bubbly, asked participants to describe their business without using the words liquor, drink, champagne, alcohol, or bottle. And they came up with... they're not just about supplying liquor. They're there to contribute to the success of parties and celebrations. Gives you a whole different perspective on that company.
Quite right. And once you've got that new perspective, then the door is wide open to all sorts of things. They started producing little booklets on how to write a speech, since speech are often important parts of parties, and they would attach that to their bottle. And they would have little games, and they would, you know, all sorts of things that they never would have thought of before, or if they had, they would have quickly eliminated them as bad ideas, because they were in the "we are a champagne company" box,
mm-hmm.
instead of "we are all about contributing to the success of parties."
Right, and it certainly differentiates them from their competition, because cutting through that noise today is getting more and more difficult.
Indeed.
So step number five in your approach to thinking in new boxes is reevaluate relentlessly. And we've all seen a lot of companies go by the wayside over the last 5 years, even. No idea remains good forever, you say. So talk to us about that and what we need to be reevaluating.
Yeah, I think it's a question of always being ready to go back to the beginning and being ready to doubt again. Reevaluate that what's gotten you this far will get you to the next level as well, in the sense that, as you say, surviving success can be just as hard as succeeding in the first place. One of my favorite examples here is Reuters, which was founded by Julius Reuter in 1851. And their core box at the time was to deliver the news and stock prices. And anybody who knows Reuters, who may be listening, is saying, well, that's still their box today. They haven't reevaluated at all. 160 years later, and they're still about news and stock price delivery. But the interesting thing is that back then they did it using carrier pigeons.
I did not know that. That's amazing.
Yeah. And they used carrier pigeons to go across the English Channel from the UK to the European continent. And basically, the reason this is so interesting to me is that over 160 years, it's easy in retrospect to say they shifted from carrier pigeons to the telegraph, to the radio, to satellites, to internet and high-speed fiber optic cables and all the rest of it. But if you really think about it, at each stage of that shift, there were companies that went by the wayside, and they had to test this new technology and pilot it and blah, 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 you know, all of these things that happened over time. And to me, the takeaway is that Reuters, in order to keep doing the same thing, had to fundamentally reinvent itself no less than five times.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's an amazing example of a company. Of course, they were recently acquired by Thomson, but they're still doing essentially the same thing. And if at any point they had gotten complacent and stopped reevaluating and gotten too married to the telegraph or the carrier pigeon, then they would have gone by the wayside like so many others.
Right. They could have sat there complaining, well, they don't use carrier pigeons anymore.
Quite right. Yeah.
Oh, that's an amazing story. So tell me how you've used this, Alan, in your life, in your personal life, at work. How has this changed you and the way you approach things?
You know, it's an amazing thing. I can try and teach it and facilitate it, but at the end of the day, I'm still a creature of habit. I'm still a human being. And, you know, I get stuck in these things as well. But, you know, one of my favorite examples, at least my favorite new example, came on the day the book actually launched, last Tuesday. And I went across the street to a coffee shop. And instead of a tip jar there, they had two tip jars. And in between the two, there was a little sign that said, you know, which TV family do you prefer? The Huxtables from The Cosby Show, and there was an arrow pointing to one tip jar, or the Tanners from Full House, and an arrow pointing to the other tip jar, right? And I thought to myself, what a magnificent new box, because the idea is that the people, the baristas, the cashiers there, realized that if they found a question that people would get really excited about, they would, you know, they would be more likely to leave a tip, yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought, it's a fantastic new box. I asked if I could take a picture. I took a picture. I tweeted it, and then I went and sat down. But then, being the consultant that I am, I got back up and went and asked them some more questions and, you know, learned, first of all, the Huxtable jar was much fuller. but more interestingly, their tips went up by 50% since they instituted this system. And, you know, they change the question every day. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of mechanics. Fine. But their tips went up dramatically. And to me, the reason that's so fantastic is because this whole idea of, you know, they could have gone through life with their old conception of what is a tip jar. And, you know, it wouldn't have been so terrible. But they actually fundamentally changed it. They challenged their box of what a tip jar is. And it had a dramatic impact on their particular piece of the world.
Wow.
And so it can be a huge reinvention like the Model T Ford or BIC, or it can be a technological change or a better way to think about cost cutting or just a redefinition of the